Today's program is brought to you by the Museum of Food and Drink, sparking curiosity about food with exhibits you can eat. For more information, visit mofad.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network, broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show where we tell the story behind your favorite Asian dishes. I'm Linda Liu, and on the line is my co-host in Hong Kong, Iris Van Kerkhove.
Good morning, everyone.
We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, Iris and I dig deep on a dish or an aspect of Asian cuisine, and we interview experts on the topic.
But before we get into today's show, Linda and I like to kick off the episode with a question for each other. What's the best thing you ate in the past week?
I would have to say this egg sandwich I had at Norman's, which is a new kind of cafeteria-style restaurant up in Greenpoint. It's opened by one of the co-founders of Noma, Klaus Myers. And he's like really leading the charge in terms of redefining Scandinavian cuisine in New York City. What about you, Iris?
That sounds cool. You had me at egg sandwich.
Yeah.
My favorite food ever. So for me, instead of something I ate, I'm going to talk about something I drank. So I think one of the first cocktails I ever had for some reason when I was like 16 or 17 was White Russians, and I guess like that's like when you're a kid and you don't really drink, it's an attractive cocktail because, you know, it's like milky, it's sweet, it's you know, doesn't taste like a cocktail, and since then I haven't had any because, you know, A, I'm lactose intolerant, and B, it's kind of disgusting to me now. But I was inspired by the Big Lebowski to try it again, except I use coffee shochu and almond milk.
Oh,
so yeah, that was pretty cool. Yeah.
That's awesome. And I just want to take this opportunity to also shout out happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
To all our listeners out there, it was Iris's birthday in Hong Kong yesterday, and Iris's birthday today here in the U.S. time zone. So today we're going to be talking about Japanese comfort food, and it kind of goes along the lines of like how you're finding, you know, like the White Russians, you know, delicious, and it's kind of like a comforting thing. So why don't you go ahead and describe the topic, Iris?
So today we're going to be talking about Japanese comfort food. I love today's topic because I feel like it's just not talked about enough. Japanese food is generally associated with being light, fresh, and very healthy, which it is compared to some cuisines, and that's definitely one of the biggest appeals to me. But when we stop and think about some of the most delicious Japanese foods we crave, they're often heartier, with bigger flavors, and sometimes not that healthy. But, of course, comfort food doesn't have to be heavy. It's a very personal experience, and it's about what's comforting for you. So, Linda, do you have a favorite Japanese comfort food?
Yeah, I would say Japanese curry with rice. It's a great one.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, just because, like, it's easy to make if you're getting the kind of prepackaged curries from the supermarket, and all you have to do is like chop up some veggies, add a protein if you want, and steam some rice. And it's just like hitting all the right like flavor profiles, like kind of salty. There's like a hint of sweet and, you know, spicy as well. What about you, Iris? What's your favorite Japanese comfort food?
I think it used to be katsudon, but I don't really do, like, deep-fried stuff anymore. So nowadays, maybe more like oyakodon. So, but basically, I think for me, comfort food is, like, hot rice and, like, egg and meat. And, you know, all of that is, like, just the best for me.
That sounds so great. So, to help us learn more about Japanese comfort food, we have Maiko Gyokoku in the studio with us. She's a Japanese-American restaurateur who opened Besso in Noho. The restaurant features a modern take on Japanese comfort food. She actually grew up in New York City and is following in her father's footsteps, who also opened a Japanese restaurant. An interesting thing we learned about Maiko is that before opening her restaurant, she used to work with the contemporary artist Takashi Murakami. Welcome to the show, Maiko.
Thank you for having me.
So, Maiko, how did you come up with the concept of Besso, and what does the word mean?
So, Besso actually is a Japanese word that means vacation home or holiday home. It also has the meaning of home away from home, and is a concept that I had been thinking about for quite some time. I've worked in restaurants and hospitality for, I don't know, since college, so that's a couple of years ago.
Yes, just a few.
But, and I also grew up in a restaurant family. My father owned a restaurant for 30 years, and he opened one of the first sushi restaurants on the Upper West Side. So it's just something, you know, I've wanted to share my own love of Japanese food, but also just, you know, food in general. If you ask any of my friends, I'm always the person who's opening my doors and hosting some kind of dinner, and I love sharing my own passions for cooking and food, but also just creating moments where people gather and share ideas or moments. And I think that, you know, that's kind of the beauty of restaurants, but I wanted something more personal. And, you know, so hopefully Besso is kind of like this home away from home for other people.
Yeah. And what did you grow up eating? So you mentioned your dad had a Japanese restaurant.
Yeah. I mean, I ate all sorts of different foods. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely, in my house, you know, my mother was a fantastic cook, and she would make udon noodles a lot. Like she was from Akita, which is a prefecture in northern Japan, and that udon is from that prefecture, but it's like thinner and you know, springier and lighter. So I have these memories of eating udon a lot, especially in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd eat it chilled with different side dishes. At the restaurant, we serve that with tempura and kind of change up the vegetables, you know, depending on what's in season. But, you know, it'd be like grated yams or... Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like, do your menu items reflect, you know, your mother's cooking?
It does, yeah. A lot of the dishes originate from things I ate at mm-hmm. home growing up. So, you know, it's not really... It might not be the typical comfort food for all Japanese people, but the same way in America where, you know, maybe in the South people are more used to eating fried chicken and collard greens or something, and then there's like deep dish pizza in Chicago or jambalaya in New Orleans or something. In Japan, there's also this kind of regionality where people from different regions grow up with different kinds of comfort food. Yeah. And yeah.
That sounds so accurate. It's like really personal to your own experiences. But I guess, would you say are there like very traditional Japanese comfort food dishes that like everyone expects? And do you have some of those on your menu?
I think so. I think everyone knows what karaage is, which mm-hmm. is a type of Japanese fried chicken, and we have that on the menu. We also have like Japanese curry on our brunch menu, and that's like one of my favorite, like, you know, standard comfort foods as well. But we take a different twist to it and mm-hmm. add a little bit of tomato puree and bake eggs in it. And it's you know, we call it a shakshuka because it's so reminiscent of that.
Yeah,
as well.
That's really cool. So I was fortunate enough to try out Maiko's restaurant over the weekend, and everything was so tasty. The one dish that really stood out to me was the grilled romaine. Could you talk about that a little bit? Because obviously romaine or like romaine salads with like anchovy and Caesar dressing is like such an American staple. So, how do you make it your own?
Sure. So our grilled romaine has some baby sardines called Jaco on it that we, you know, fry crisp and we sprinkle all over. It's funny because a lot of people don't notice that it's like fish at first.
Yeah, at first it looks like little like onion, fried onion pieces.
Right, and then you look closely and there's like little eyes. We're like, ignore that. But there's like celery ribbon and soy pickled quail eggs, and then there's like a creamy sesame dressing on top. And the idea behind that is, you know, growing up, we had this like family, you know, sesame dressing that we would always have in the fridge, and it goes well with everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's like a great way to eat salad if you don't love like greens too.
Right.
Especially when you're younger. But yeah, we would have this dressing, and I'd put it on everything, but it always reminded me of like a creamy dressing, like a Caesar dressing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, in that romaine dish, there's a lot of different comfort elements to it that's not necessarily Japanese. Like, I think grilled romaine and like those ideas of a Caesar salad is also really comforting to Americans. And I'm really like interested in that intersection mm-hmm. of different kinds of food memories.
Yeah.
So maybe to somebody, they're eating it and they're like, oh, this is like a Caesar salad, you know, and to me, it's like my favorite sesame dressing growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And to a lot of Japanese people, too, I think like that kind of the flavors of the crispy jacko or the sesame dressing is really familiar to them.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It probably brings up different versions of food memories
mm-hmm.
for your different clientele.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you also, I asked you, like, you know, while I was there, what was, like, you know, your favorite dish on the menu at the time, and you said the umeboshi fritters.
Uh-huh.
Could you describe what that is? Because it was such a, like, new flavor
yeah.
for me.
Umeboshi is pickled plum, and there's different types of it, but we use, like, the younger, unripened version that's a little crunchy.
Mm-hmm.
It's red in color when you know it's just like when you first look at it, but we batter it and fry it in panko
mm-hmm.
and we pair it with a tahini tofu puree, and a lot of people are reminded of fried olives when they have it. And for me, like, I part of, you know, what I'd love to do is to introduce people more to these Japanese ingredients that they're not necessarily familiar with. Umeboshi is one of those things where I think a lot of people have this like aversion to because
mm-hmm.
it's so sour.
Yeah, usually it's like, is it like served by itself or is it like paired with something? I think I've also seen it in like rice balls too.
Yeah, normally it's eaten as a rice topping.
Mm-hmm.
You can put it in like a rice porridge, like a congee, or you can put it in a rice ball. It's always paired with, for the most part, with rice. You can make it into a paste and use it in confections too sometimes.
Mm.
But it's never used as like a fritter or a fried item.
Yeah, you seem to have like transformed this like fairly foreign ingredient into a familiar comfort type of like object.
Yeah, I mean, thank you. I mean, that's one of the things I want to try to do, which is kind of, you know, make Japanese food more familiar. So it's like a combination of presenting my own comfort food, but also creating these dishes from Japanese ingredients that might be comforting to other people.
Yeah, so you're a second generation restaurateur, right? I am. Yeah, so how do you feel about, you know, your food, categorizing your food? Do you want to, like, keep calling it Japanese comfort food, or...
I think it's challenging sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I was born here in New York and grew up American, but I'm also Japanese. And in my home, I grew up eating Japanese food, but I also ate all different kinds of food like everyone else. Like, you know, I mean, my own palate and comfort food growing up is like, you know, like the oyakodon and mm-hmm. all that, and curry, but it's also burgers and fries and pizza and all that. So in creating the menu and also just having a restaurant that's Japanese, sometimes, you know, I think I'm constantly pushing the bar and trying to kind of recreate what that means. Yeah. And I think it's easy, you know, I think it's more appropriate to call it good food.
Yeah.
Because it's like hard to like label, you know, what we're doing. I think that it's like, you know, it could be called Japanese American mm-hmm. food, but it's also just food that's inspired by Japanese comfort food and other, you know, other ingredients that's like local and seasonal. Mm-hmm.
So for the people like walking into your restaurant, do you feel like they have expectations? And also what kind of clientele do you get?
I think we have a very eclectic kind of clientele. I think there are people who really love the kind of unique dishes and flavors that we're doing. And a lot of people end up being from the art industry or fashion, people who are really kind of appreciative of this new type of cuisine. Mm-hmm. In terms of expectations, I think a lot of people still think about Japanese food and automatically go to sushi and ramen. Right. So there's definitely those people who are confused that we're not like a sushi restaurant.
Yeah, or like where's that part of the menu missing?
And we try to actually, you know, I understand that there's certain like expectations. So I think that it's important to like satisfy those cravings or, you know, so we do have certain sushi kind of spin-offs, like we have a sashimi rice platter that's like a do-it-yourself hand roll platter mm-hmm. and we have like a crispy rice that's actually a rice ball that we fry crisp and then there's like different sashimi toppings on it. So I think it's like difficult to say like I want to change people's minds about what Japanese food is, but mm-hmm. I think it's like little baby steps.
Yeah, and you're doing it in a comforting way, holding their hands.
Yeah. And I love that you're like accommodating to that rather than being like, oh, you know, people are ignorant. Why do you think all Japanese restaurants have to be sushi?
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, I think that because for myself, it's like I love a good California roll or like I love, you know, it's not like I'm against those things. And I think like some of the great restaurateurs of New York, like Danny Bowen or something, or, you know, even like David Chang, like I think they do a lot of that kind of pushing the bar and challenging, yep. like, what is Chinese food or mm-hmm. what is whatever kind of food, you know? And I think it's important to kind of create and innovate and like keep pushing people's comfort zones mm-hmm. too. Because at the end of the day, I think there's, like, really no boundaries to what food is. Like, I think, you know, it's hard to categorize, like, Japanese food or Korean food or American food because it's ever-changing.
Yeah, and especially like, from your lens.
Right.
As someone that's grown up here and, definitely. You know, with the background that you have.
I mean, I think that, you know, people's palates change, but it's, like, depending on your, on where you are in your environment, like, what that type of food is definitely changed because mm-hmm. of whatever produce is available or the flavors that's there.
Yep, that sounds quite fair. So we're going to take a really quick break and we'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, I'm Dave Arnold, the host of Cooking Issues on the Heritage Radio Network. We all know and love Chinese takeout dishes like General Tso's chicken and egg rolls, but here's the thing. Even though we call it Chinese food, it's not like the food you'd find in China. What's the story behind this cuisine, and how did it become so popular that you can find a Chinese-American restaurant in nearly every town in the country? The answers may surprise you. Visit the Museum of Food and Drink in Brooklyn and see our newest exhibition, Chow, Making the Chinese-American Restaurant. Chow engages visitors with compelling accounts of how Chinese immigrants overcame racism and created Chinese-American cuisine. Discover the science behind the flavors of your favorite takeout dishes, feast on rotating tastings developed by the country's most talented Chinese-American chefs, and try your hand at writing your own fortune, which will be baked into actual cookies by a 1,500-pound fortune cooking machine. But what better way to learn, connect, and eat? You can visit Chow at the Museum of Food and Drink on Fridays through Sundays from noon to 6. Tickets and more information can be found at mofad.org.
Hi, I'm Carrie Diamond, host of Radio Cherry Bomb, the show about women and food on Heritage Radio Network. Tune in on Thursdays at 1 p.m. to hear interviews with the most interesting women in the world of food. Support our show and all of Heritage Radio Network's programming. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate.
Welcome back. You're listening to Feast Meets West, and we're here talking to Maiko of Besso. So really curious about your time in the art world and working with Murakami. Has that influenced your like restaurateur experience at all?
I mean, I've always had an appreciation for art and for kind of good design and aesthetics, mm-hmm. and I think I'm pretty, you know, conscientious of that when we're creating the menu or thinking about plating, and even in the design of the space.
Yeah, I can tell it comes through.
Yeah, like I love that kind of minimalist Japanese design, and like, I mean, there's like little details, but I like, for example, I've always been a fan of like the Shinto and Buddhist shrines that don't use any nails to construct houses.
Yeah.
So like our shelving doesn't use any nails, and like, you know, I mean,
oh my God, I didn't notice that. Okay. I'll have to go back and inspect your shelves.
But it's like, I mean, I must have tortured my contractor, because I was like, make this into like a Buddhist temple. No, I mean, I really appreciate that kind of attention to detail.
Yeah, and I feel also like in the hustle bustle of NoHo, you know, it is quite like peaceful walking in there, and it's like the dim lighting and the wood.
Yeah, I mean, I think that block is really special too. Mm-hmm. There's something really different about it, even though it's like right off the Bowery, and you know, somehow that part of Bleecker Street, because like the other side of Bleecker is like very different, but mm-hmm. you know, in the NoHo area, it's like a lot more peaceful and just like almost like this like hidden street mm-hmm. that you discover. So yeah, I really love that.
And there's like art galleries and like museums in the area. Did that like influence your decision at all, or
maybe
did your like art friends say like you should open in?
I didn't really think about that initially, but maybe unconsciously, because there are a lot of galleries around there that I love.
Yeah, so that's really great.
Yeah.
And so one interesting thing is also, I feel like you guys are on like really like the top 10 list for like new brunch places to try as well. That's awesome. But yeah, what is like a Japanese American inspired type of brunch? What counts as like Japanese brunch?
I think that, well, on our menu, we have the curry shakshuka I had mentioned. We also have a tonkatsu sandwich with, you know, an egg scallion scramble. We have a traditional Japanese breakfast, which is, you know, the grilled fish with rice. There's like an onsen egg, which is like a soft poached egg, basically, with like a shiitake and ginger sauce. And then there's miso soup and rice and pickles. And it's kind of like, I think a lot of people enjoy that kind of like zen dining experience.
Yeah.
So there's definitely that. But we're a lot more kind of like, it's a lot more
It's bread based.
Maybe. I mean, it's a mix of both. Like, there's a lot of like milk toast and, you know, different, like we have like dandan udon noodles. There's definitely like a mix of different influences.
Yeah, it sounds like you can kind of cater to the entire range of folks who are expecting that traditional Zen experience in your Buddhist shrine. And then like what like people would expect from like cafes and drawing on like egg components and breads.
Right. I mean, there's this whole cafe culture in Japan and they...
Oh, what like, is that? Like, tell us about that.
So like in, you know, in Japanese cafes, there's always like thick cut toast and you know, these big sandwiches that have usually some kind of like a, you know, fried protein like chicken or pork or, you know, and there's... also definitely like sweets like ice cream or little pastries. We make like a matcha babka. So it's definitely like a nod to New York because, you know, there's like a huge Jewish community and I grew up on the Upper West Side. So there's definitely a lot of really great Jewish like Jewish food. So it's like a nod to that as well. But I mean, I think that in Japanese cuisine too, with cafe culture and different kinds of food, like even with ramen, there's always this kind of adaptation from other world foods. I think Japanese culture in general does a really great job of like adapting and making something else their own.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of that. And I think that we do that in our brunch menu and our dinner, dinner menu. It's like this kind of going back to maybe other cuisines too.
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess in this conversation, bread and like fried foods have been brought up quite frequently. Would you say that these are like crucial components to comfort food?
I think to American comfort food, for sure. And I think that who doesn't love something fried? I mean, you try to avoid it because it's like bad for you, but it's so comforting. And it's also something that maybe you don't necessarily want to make at home. So especially when you're going out, it's like something you really want to have. But there's nothing more satisfying than like really like crispy, you know, piece of fried chicken or or even just like really like, you know, really great like potato wedges or something, you know. Some we have like potato wedges, but we also have these smashed fingerling potatoes with mentaiko aioli, which is kind of a Japanese comfort food, so to speak.
So what's next for you and the restaurant? What are your goals around it?
I would love to share this type of kind of Japanese American comfort food in different forms. So we've started to do a bento program where we do wholesale bento. We're like servicing Boba Guys right now, which I know
that's awesome. Love the synergies.
And we're, you know, supplying to different workspaces as well, but I would love to just introduce, you know, Japanese comfort food in general, but just this type of new wave of new Japanese food.
Like you said, like putting the puree in the shakshuka. Mixed with the squash as well. That's pretty cool.
Exactly.
So unexpected ingredients but in like familiar forms. Yeah, that sounds really great. And so what about like you personally? Do you have like any other projects brewing? You know, are you still like you know, adding more shelves to the restaurant?
Well, we're still, you know, we're still so new.
When did you guys open again?
Last August. We're about like 10 months now. I would love to open other places in the future, but yeah, I think that for the time being we really want to grow kind of different offshoot things, maybe doing more catering and more events. I mean, that is also my background before this. So yeah, I would love to do that.
Awesome. We're so excited to see you guys grow.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for our show today. And for listeners who want to learn more about Besso, how should they stay connected with you?
Well, we have our website, mm-hmm. besso.nyc. They can also reach us at konnichiwa at besso.nyc. Oh,
okay, that's cute.
So, yeah.
Sounds great.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show, Maiko.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you to our listeners for your continued support.
And listeners, we do have one request for you. You can think of it as your birthday gift to me. If you can spare 2 to 3 minutes today, it would be much appreciated if you could log into the iTunes store, search Feast Meets West by Heritage Radio Network, and leave us a rating and short review. We're still a relatively new show, so the more reviews we have, the more visibility we'll have on iTunes, and more folks can find the show.
Yes. And we'll be back next week with another awesome conversation from the world of Asian food.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.